Welcome to the General Soup Podcast, a podcast about all things related to special education accountability and support systems, also known as general supervision. I'm Sarah Dutre.
And I'm Susan Hayes, and we will be your hosts from the National Center for Systemic Improvement, or NCSI, on this exploration of general supervision systems, and also the world of soup jokes. Hi, everybody. This is Susan, and we are so glad to be here with you today for another podcast episode. Sarah and I always learn so much from these podcasts and hope that you do as well. And today we are excited to welcome two wonderful guests from the Connecticut Department of Education, and we'll introduce you to them in just a minute. But of course, this is the General Soup Podcast. So let's get started by sharing our favorite soups. Sarah, why don't you tell us what you and your family are enjoying right now in the world of soup?
Thanks, Susan. This year, we subscribed to a new farm co-op and have been getting a box every week. And so I've had to try some new recipes to use the produce we've been getting, especially so we can use it before the next box comes. So my cousin introduced me to a delicious zucchini chowder that uses not only the squash in the box, but fresh tomatoes and fresh corn. And I'm really enjoying it. It's tougher to get the kids to eat, but I really like it.
That sounds delicious. And I had you go first because that sounds really healthy and wonderful. And I feel like I'm going to fail you with my offering. I mean, I had to go back, as you know, to my recipe list. I did make a slow cooker beef stew last week. That's really good. It's been sort of like a family standby. So I will share that recipe, but I'm just going to be transparent and say, I have fallen off the cooking bandwagon and maybe recording for this podcast will get me back on it. But we have this lovely offering in town. It's called the Richmond Community Kitchen. And it's a group of people that prepare meals and you can sort of go buy them frozen. And I've been leaning into that. I don't know. I lost a little bit of my cooking mojo maybe as a result of the pandemic and making all the meals all the time for the family. So anyway, your zucchini chowder has inspired me. I need to cook more, especially soups, but I will share the beef stew recipe. It's a winner. But when I went back to look at what I've been cooking over the past few weeks, I realized the answer was not much anyway. But thank you for sharing your, that sounds like a lovely soup. And yeah, I'm going to be inspired by it moving forward.
Well, I can relate to that. And I will share with you that I think once the co-op ends, I will probably be done preparing fresh vegetables for quite a while because it's been pretty exhausting. So it was a nice external accountability, but I don't foresee it continuing.
Thank you for making me feel better. So we've been looking forward to today's topic for some time. Inevitably, even when we try to section off fiscal from other general supervision conversations and work, it comes back around. It keeps sneaking back on our radar. And this has never been truer than the past few years, which have brought increases to federal IDEA funding, in addition to unprecedented investments in schools in response to the COVID-19 pandemic. With change being the only constant, it seems that creating cohesion across program and fiscal planning has really received heightened attention. Therefore, is the topic of our conversation today.
Thanks, Susan. That's so true. And today I'm representing not only NCSI, but also the Center for IDEA Fiscal Reporting, or CIFR. And it does feel like over the years through both centers, as we've worked on fiscal issues related to special education, requests often come up when there are potential problems on the back end related to leaving funds unexpended or when noncompliance is identified through fiscal monitoring. But with this influx of funds, as well as I think an increasing complexity of student needs during and following the pandemic, it's really spurred the need for new approaches to planning for strategic use of both the ongoing and the one-time funding. And so for this episode, we're really excited to highlight and learn more about how Connecticut has taken a proactive approach to establishing some sustainable supports for both the professionals making decisions about program and fiscal decisions and for students.
So given that context, we are really excited to introduce our listeners today to our two wonderful guests, Brian Klimkowitz and Tom Boudreau from the Connecticut Department of Education. Welcome, Brian and Tom. Brian, will you kick us off and share a bit about your role there at the department, maybe a little bit about your background, and tell us your favorite part of the job?
Absolutely. Thank you, Susan. It's an honor to be on this podcast this afternoon. My name is Brian Klimkowitz, as you mentioned. I am the Division Director of Special Education for the State Department of Education and beginning my fifth year in this role as the State Director in Connecticut. I'm humbled and honored to serve in this role. My background is in psychology. I've had experience as a paraprofessional in a non-certified role. I've had experience as a special education teacher, and then later in my career as an administrator and an assistant superintendent for student services. And just before moving to the State Department of Education, I served in a role as assistant superintendent for student services, all at the local education level. I do have some experience as well working in private special education programs. My favorite part of the job is just the opportunity to work with amazing, talented individuals and experts in the field of special education. And my professional goal is to do my job better tomorrow than I've done today. So that continuous improvement and making an impact in our state to improve outcomes for students with disabilities is my motivation.
Oh, that's beautiful. Thanks, Brian. And I love having you all on as guests to this podcast because I've known you for a little while, but it's lovely to actually hear you talk about your experience and your career and where you began. So I learned something new too. Thanks for that. And now, Tom, your turn. Can you tell us a bit about your role at the department, your background, and what you like best about the job?
Sure. Thank you, Susan and Sarah. My name is Tom Boudreaux. Like many of us in education, I wear many hats at the Bureau of Special Education. I have a master's degree in educational psychology with over 30 years of experience working with individuals with disabilities. My background is actually as a behavioral psychologist. I worked with the Connecticut Institute for the Blind for almost 20 years and then worked for the Department of Developmental Services before I came to the Connecticut State Department of Education, or CSDE. I was hired just about 10 years ago. And I was first hired at the Bureau to support students with autism spectrum disorder, traumatic brain injury, assistive technology, UDL, and those type of pieces in relationship to that. But about 6 years ago, we had a hiring freeze, as most state departments can go through those cycles. And the consultant responsible for IDEA Part B retired during that. So I do systems and like those type of elements. And so was assigned to take over the IDEA Part B Section 611, 619. I'm now, for over 6 years, been the IDEA fiscal manager. And one of the things I enjoy is the challenge of bridging the gap between programmatic and the fiscal side of things.
Thank you, Tom. And like Susan said, I learned something new from both of you. And Tom, I don't know if I'd heard that before and just didn't remember, but I've known you for the past 5 or 6 years as a fiscal person and would have thought, given like your participation in presentations with us at our IDEA fiscal forum and OSEP leadership and other things, that you were a fiscal person for a lot longer than the past 6 years. So I have to say you have done a really amazing job bridging that gap. And that really speaks to why we wanted to speak to both of you today and learn more about how you've been doing that at the Connecticut Department of Education, how you've been bringing fiscal and program planning together. And I know we want to talk about some specific activities you've been doing recently, but we'd like to start by learning about how program and fiscal generally work together in your office. And given your background, Tom, that probably helps a little bit, but could you talk to a little bit about prior to and outside of the strategies you've recently adopted, how have the fiscal and program offices communicated and worked together at the state level in Connecticut?
Sure. In the Bureau of Special Education, the BSE, we've always had the fiscal IDEA fiscal manager as one of the team members. And the CSDE, Connecticut State Department of Education, has a Bureau of Fiscal Services that manages the accounting part of things, the resources that come in. And there's also Bureau of Grants Management that supports the allocations that the Bureau of Fiscal Services gets by running the federal formula for, basically, we have a small state with about 169 eligible LEAs. The CSDE then has an electronic grants management system, we call it EGMS, and the BSC supports eligible LEAs with the allocations that have been developed by the formula through that system, and we connect with the LEAs related to any elements of breakout for IDEA Part B activities in their budget, and as needed, set aside for proportionate share private school activities budget, and then the coordinated early intervening services. We rely on certainly elements in relationship to our own. We have an internal audit system and then local auditors for monitoring some of the expenditures, and we communicate with that. And they're just one of several risk factors that we use in the department in relationship to our IDEA fiscal monitoring for our risk rubric, which we do annually. And we have communication with the LEAs depending upon their status, if they're in low, moderate, or high in relationship to dealing with any concerns around the IDEA.
Sarah, just if I can add, thanks for that, Tom, that great description. Your point about Tom's experience and background here is so critical, I believe. We all have, working at the state departments, each state is structured a little differently organizationally. And I feel like one of our strengths in Connecticut is having an individual overseeing these activities that understands both the programmatic and the fiscal side of things. That's a unique skill set, if you will. And I think, you know, our ability to include Tom's expertise around our general monitoring and supervision internal teams has really been important to us to not only coordinate those activities, but also structurally to think about our general monitoring and supervision from that perspective of accountability and follow through to support those activities of actually happening. So we made a commitment early on to incorporate fiscal into our general monitoring team, which is a very small team in Connecticut. And that's really paid dividends. And that perspective, I feel, is one of the reasons why we've been able to, you know, launch some of the successful activities that we have.
That's such a great point, Brian. It makes me think of the general supervision puzzle pieces. And depending on the visual you're looking at, the fiscal puzzle piece is often in the middle. So it makes me wonder if we have any program staff from other states listening to this, they may think, oh no, my director is going to come ask me to oversee fiscal because it's worked so well in Connecticut. But appreciate you sharing just sort of the history of the evolution of Tom's role. And as you described, what an asset it's been to have his expertise and the program experience that he contributes to the work.
And just to go on record, I absolutely love the puzzle pieces as a fiscal, not a fiscal, as a visual representation of the systems. It's helpful, and it's actually made us think also of our dispute resolution system and incorporating that in. I know that's not our topic today, but yeah, absolutely. I think anytime we're able to, you know, put those visuals in place and then put the structures behind them, as far as our internal operations, we're better off for it.
Hear, hear, and you are prescient because that is, in fact, our next podcast episode focused on dispute resolution. So we may have to have you all back. But let's pivot to something Sarah raised, her question a few minutes ago, and the fact that the last 2 years have looked really different because of the pandemic. Can you all speak to the challenges related to the pandemic that you've experienced and how you're helping districts plan to use all of the new federal resources to support their work?
Absolutely. I think, Susan, we're still really trying to understand that just the comprehensive impact that the last few years have had on us, and we will be, you know, for the unforeseeable future. We are fortunate in Connecticut to have an amazing performance office team, and our districts really stepped up to be able to report data, student level data to us over the last couple of years, despite the challenges of meeting the students' academic and social needs. We asked districts to send us information around attendance in a different way, information around the mode of instruction, and being able to collect that on a monthly basis rather than at the end of the school year. We also were able to collect information around our state assessments in a different manner to be able to differentiate for students who their main mode of instruction was virtual versus a combination of in-person and virtual, and then those individuals that were in-person all along. our district's really committed to supporting students with IEPs in person to the extent that was possible. And they really prioritize those high need students. And as I mentioned, we were able to really look at and analyze the data that was coming in thanks to the district's efforts to share that with us. As far as the fiscal side of things and how that supports all of those activities, there is a lot for districts to manage. The federal funding streams are, you know, it's safe to say that in no other time in these leaders' careers have they had so many different streams to be able to access to support students with IEPs and students with Section 504 plans. So within that, I think we've tried to help districts understand and communicate the variety of timelines, just the basics, the timelines that go along with those funding streams, how at the state level, we weaved in our priorities as a state that were generated from the stakeholder conversations, and then helped people understand the similarities and the differences between the funding streams that they've typically accessed versus these new funding streams and how we could leverage those to help students recover. So we are in the midst of analyzing that. And I think Tom and the team have done a great job of streamlining our communication to help folks understand the importance of the different structures. Tommy, I can turn it over to you if you wanted to expand a little bit about those communication structures that we put in place.
Yeah, I mean, part of what those of you who aren't, you know, have a map in front of you, Connecticut's right next door to New York. And yeah, although we're a small state, it's very diverse of where we had districts that were abutting New York who were dealing with, you know, New York was a hotspot for some time around the COVID concerns. And so how those districts manage it versus other ones on the other side of the state, which is rather rural, it was very different. And we really had to, as Brian said, have good communication so that districts are able to understand what was the impact for your district, for your students, and how we're going to be able to help them and allow, you know, the district to make success through this challenging time.
Wow. Thanks for sharing. And Brian, such great points about the data and then having structures in place to respond to that, right? That feels like a practice we could adopt broader than just COVID, like digging into understanding how kids are learning and things like that. Just that's what struck me, is that real child-focused approach to what is the impact on the kids rather than the system, and then pulling that up, to your point, to make systemic level decisions. So Tom and Brian, can you tell us about how those pieces you've talked about, the communication around COVID, knowing the needs, starting to see the data about kids, led to preparing for your first Building Capacity and Establishing Sustainable Support Summit? How did you come up with that? How did you get buy-in from the broad district teams to participate? What resources did you make available for districts to help them engage in a new way? Can you tell us more about that, the summit that you started?
Sure. The idea of Building Capacity and Establishing a Sustainable Support Summit kind of arose as soon as these additional dollars started coming out, because we knew that the districts really needed to make a plan. They had to be a planful way by which to get this money and then be able to execute it. And a quote came from me of, and I hope I say his name right, of Kenichi Oma. He's like a Japanese organizational theorist. Well, rowing harder doesn't help if the boat is headed in the wrong direction. And the real key for us was that every single district has their own needs they need to meet, but they all need to be rowing in the same way so that we're all able to pull together and really learn from each other and gain strength from each other. And so one of the real keys for me with that goes back to my original point that I really felt we needed the full team to be there, the special education director, those who are in charge of finances, the assistant superintendents, all those decision makers being in the same room at the same table at the same time, trying to make decisions so that they could discuss a plan and then braid sources and ensure money is utilized as an appropriate way and that we're expending it the right way. So the concept early on was to be there, to have everybody together. And that, to be candid, I heard from multiple LEAs that that was the first time they ever like sat down with their business director. So that was just a new kind of way for them to all talk about the same thing at the same time and kind of learn each other's language a little bit and understand what the other one was talking about. So that I think was really beneficial. And then being able to use that in a virtual platform so that they could be as a team. And then it was a 2-day summit where day one was making a plan and then day two was making connections. Because having the plan and having the resources and then knowing where you're going to do with those resources, because it's always great to have idea, but you need to execute that. So that was part of what we started early on in having the conversations of being able to have the kind of the urgency to leverage these funds and have recovery as soon as possible to impact most individuals that the pandemic kind of impacted. We were able to get them all on the same page. And we had, fortunately, again, we have IDEA. We talked about all the sources of our IDEA, how it was under the umbrella of IDEA. And then we were fortunate that the state gave us ESSER II through the BSE. Funds basically were broken down by the number of IEPs that a district might have. They got it small, medium, large, extra large funds. Bonus money when they identified a particular population that needed to be worked on, and then dyslexia funds in particular for tutoring around that particular population. As Brian pointed out, we found that, you know, population impacted remarkably with our data. And then we had as well special ed activities for training and those type of things. So we had several different resources, all from federal dollars coming out. And so we had to try and help the districts really make a plan. So we met. We talked about avoiding pitfalls, such as having that big, you know, money cliff at the end, because it's tough to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars in a few months if you don't have a plan. Talking about mistakes, try to avoid them, such as meeting MOE and you can't be placing any of this federal dollars into where you've been using your effort for before. So being able to pay attention to that and work with the MOE calculator that Cypher has developed to put in scenarios and to find those things. And then really talking about creating capacity and sustainable supports beyond staffing. Because if you can find somebody to hire, because all of us are now dealing with that end of things, and to be able to have something that's really going to be impactful for a period of time. So we met, the districts bought in right away, knowing that they really wanted direction. They wanted to know what to do with these resources. And we had our regional educational service centers, we have 6 of them, that actually were part of my group early on as a facilitator to have breakouts, because they know the resources within their different areas and with those relationships with those LEAs. So we had them make a jam board to take all these ideas that they want to do with this money. The jam board was then brought back to the larger group so that together other districts might see, hey, that's a great idea. Maybe we can do that. Hey, they're doing something similar. Maybe we can partner with them. Maybe we can take these sources and these resources and truly braid them to really be able to, you know, have that tide rise that everybody's boat's going to really rise up. So they did that. It worked out very well with the communication with the jam board. And then day two, we had the connections of the resources. We tried to have individuals that were with BRCA 3 around assistive technology, around transition, and around dyslexia as well, to have those resource people there, to have those questions. And so that's kind of what we did. And it was a real good success.
You know, I appreciate that, all that Tom shared there. And just wanted to add that there's a few things in place that I believe that district buy-in and urgency is there. It's across the state and really across our country. I mean, people were invested in ensuring that students' needs were met, as you know, to the extent possible through the pandemic and all of the different varieties of challenges that their districts were facing with that. As Tom mentioned, you know, we're in the Northeast, we're a small state, but we have 170 separate LEAs. So what we tried to do is ensure that there were structures in place to get those funds to the districts, help them assess their local needs, analyze the data that they had at their level aligned with our priorities. So that really was a structure that LEAs responded well to. They knew as a state where our priorities were focused, and then they were able to then assess and analyze their own local situations to leverage those activities moving forward. So as Tom mentioned, we did have priorities and areas of state level funds to supplement and support, but districts also had a lot of autonomy and creative solutions for filling out those applications. We were absolutely blown away by the different variety of creative solutions that folks were putting in place. And I think the message across our departments is, let's take students where they are and help them move forward wherever that happens to be. And it's really a testament to our stakeholder process leading up to this, in that we worked with all entities, even parent attorneys and our legislative groups, to ensure that voice was heard and contributed to those priority areas. And, you know, Tom mentioned those important pieces around funding cliffs and maintenance of effort. Our districts don't want that to happen. I mean, they know some of the risks involved with that. And if resources are put in place to address issues in the short term, there has to be a larger plan to support that and take that to the next level. So I think that's also, you know, one of those pieces that's worked for us is that unified goal, really, and vision across the state to help students where they are move forward.
Brian, I love that. And I love this thought of come to us, bring your innovation, and let us help you reduce the risk of you getting in trouble down the road for being innovative now, right? This idea that come bring to us your innovative ideas. We're not starting from the fiscal rules and saying, here are all the fiscal rules you have to meet. We're starting from meet kids where they are, plan something that's going to help them. And we're going to help you plan to make it so that doesn't end up coming back down the road and hurting you in an audit or something like that.
Exactly.
What a great approach. Anything else from the summit that you'd like to share? What went well? Any aha moments?
Well, there was a couple aha moments. We didn't require the LEAs to kind of come with their total resources broken down. And so we have that now, and that might have been easier or better, you know, in relationship to know what the total amount of money was that they're working with. The other elements is that I wish we had more time with my facilitators for them to kind of, I think each group was only as good as that facilitator a little bit. So when they came back to the larger group, it's still allowed to be a mix. But there was some that was not as much robust conversation that probably could have happened. And then I think that part of the making the connections on day two as well, I wish that we maybe had more generated the LEAs asking those questions. We kind of had a set questions and kind of each one went through. So that might have been better if it was kind of driven from the LEA perspective. But overall, I do think that there has been a real benefit from that. And at least when we'll be talking about a little bit of what we're going to be doing in the future as follow-up with some of these pieces.
So what are your ongoing plans? Are you continuing this planning approach, even though the recovery funds are slowing down and the time period for them are ending? Are you going to change anything for future summits if they continue?
Absolutely, Sarah. We do have plans moving forward. One of the things that I wanted to mention is our investment in a Connecticut evaluation process. We have an educational research collaborative that initially has been able to analyze Connecticut's investment around our summer enrichment activities, non-special education related just as a whole, as well as our remote learning processes. So it's an entity that exists with our higher ed programs in Connecticut. Proposals are brought through this group, and then the result is a publicly facing report on whether what the investment was planning to do, what the outcome of those investments were. In other words, were they implemented with Fidelity or had adjustments needed to be made along the lines, you know, to be flexible and to be adaptive, and then measuring those outcomes to see, are these areas that we want to reinforce and reinvest in the future or not? So we are looking forward to helping our LEAs at their level evaluate and adjust as needed. And I think that really lends itself back to Tom's description of how powerful it is to have leaders from the superintendent's office, leaders from the business management side of the district, and then special education leaders all working together for those same points. You know, we always want to go back to the data that we have as well to make sure that we're reporting that in ways that are easily digestible to our districts. We have a new publicly facing EdSite section of our performance office resource in which districts are able to look at the results of student assessment during the spring of the previous year. And we've interviewed districts who have either maintained achievement or actually been able to excel. And we break those out by all students, students with high needs, and we're able to delineate students that have IEPs as well. And the themes from our district were really consistent for those high performing districts and rather simple when you think about it. But they pointed to a few key things. One, high expectations for students. You know, not having this, and I don't mean to say this in a derogatory manner, but that kind of victim mentality of all these bad things are happening. Of course, we're not going to do well. And taking that approach, we know that doesn't work in education. And the local leaders were able to maintain high expectations for students. And those are the districts that excelled. Within that, they maintained rigor. I spoke about earlier meeting students where they are, which is absolutely appropriate, but then ensuring the rigor was there so that it would curtail any type of drop of achievement. Everyone experienced trauma in different ways during the pandemic. So it was, you know, acknowledging that trauma, supporting it, and then helping those students again move forward. And the final consistent theme of those districts that were performing well was doubling down on interventions for kids. So if they had one reading interventionist in the school, they hired another one. If they had, you know, five, they hired as many more as they could. And they really doubled down on the ability to put together and put in place in their structures research-based interventions to help students excel from the points they were at. I know, you know, Tom has laid a very strong foundation and structures that we're able to tap into, and we're looking forward to adjusting. I mean, we think we know what the next year or two have in store for us, but really none of us do. But I really believe we're stronger as a state in what we've been through, and it's really put things into perspective and helped us to prioritize activities and structure supports in a manner that is individualized yet unified, in that it's a common vision that we all share aligned to our statewide priorities.
No question, Brian. And so as a follow-up that we're doing is we're doing, again, a statewide training in October for a follow-up with the fiscal summit and hopefully those same teams to come together in order to pull out those plans. And as Brian just said, do we need to readjust? Do we need to make a tweak here? How's it looking in relationship to what we said we were gonna do, and what are we doing? And as a follow-up, I'm actually offering fiscal conversations to offer LEAs about a 15-30 minute virtual review to come and speak with me to look at what they talked about and what your money looks like and how we're gonna make sure that you're gonna be expending those resources. Because one thing that is still a major challenge is districts, I think, taking those resources and drawing them down out of our EGMS system and really being able to apply them. So being able to kind of bring that to light to those LEAs to ensure that the plan that you have, what resources do we still have by which to make sure that they come to fruition?
That's wonderful and such a fantastic concrete example of how districts can be really thoughtful and strategic about using their fiscal resources to advance their priorities and meet challenges and needs that emerge. So thank you for sharing. And I think for our final question, we'd love your thoughts more broadly on how you all can continue to leverage your role there at the state to support districts to be cohesive in their efforts to really integrate their fiscal resources with their programmatic priorities. We'd love your thoughts on that, and as well as what you see as the most significant barriers to that type of cohesive planning and what your strategies are for overcoming them and really supporting districts to be intentional in their use of funds.
That's a great question, Susan. And part of what, you know, the barriers that we kind of see is it's being able to make relationships. Relationships are going to be the thing that's going to make the change. And being able to start the change, it can't be kind of business as usual, kind of siloed. We really need to pull together more and learn to appreciate one another's work and appreciate how they're doing. And so through that collaboration and through that team that may have met for the first time and now is meeting again, it might encourage you to meet again and to be able to talk about very difficult things and challenges. But together we're stronger so that we are rowing in the same direction and so that the efforts are really pointing us to where we need to be. And thus through, you know, the fiscal conversations with us and the transparency, going back to what Brian saying, of bringing to us your ideas, let's work this so that it's going to meet your needs and it's going to meet the students in your district in order to have success. I think that that is some of the real challenges. And we talked about that before, trying to break those silos down. That's really being able to change kind of the way we're looking at it, I think. And Brian, you had something?
No, well said, Tom. Absolutely. I think the critical piece is ensuring that our LEAs see fiscal processes not as a task to do or an application to complete and then it's done. It's an ongoing look at and infusion in their everyday practices. And directors and teachers and administrators at the local level have so much on their plate that logistically it's like, oh, now it's time for me to do my IDA grant. I'm going to do that or some parts of it. And then something's going to happen in this office, but really more of how do we coordinate those activities and build them into their everyday systems that are in place. And I really think it starts with us at the state level and even really at the federal level of us modeling how our organizations work. And it's safe to say that we have a lot of work to do in that area. You know, we're not a perfect organization by any means, but as I mentioned earlier, you know, it's an honor for me to be in the role that I am. And we all strive to be cohesive and to be coordinated. But one of my mentors when I was first starting as a director and even now to current day is John Copenhaver, who I know that you all know. And I hope he doesn't mind me saying this, but he told me that in his lifetime, he would love to see one set of laws and regulations for all kids. And until that happens, there's these different, you know, procedures and different things that happen in different areas of expertise. And it's complex. We have to understand the complexities of this work are enormous. And even if that's your only hat that you're wearing and that's your only job, tapping into resources like NCSI and WestEd and Cypher are so critical to our survival because, you know, there aren't a lot of individuals who have that level of expertise in the state, in the country. And Tom mentioned our facilitators, you know, we want to build capacity in our own state so that knowledge doesn't lay in or lie with one person or one department or one individual. So we definitely have our work cut out for us. I think we could do a better job at the federal and state levels modeling of what that looks like for us. And then, you know, putting a roadmap in place for districts similar to what we did with the special education activities. So it's certainly a goal that we all have. And as Tom mentioned, we can't do our work in silos and there's only so much breaking down of walls that a person can do. So we know what's effective and we just have to model it and reinforce it.
Thank you, Brian. I think that's how kids are, right? That kids are complex. And how many kids do you know that have an IEP that aren't getting services under some other program as well, right? Hopefully none. Hopefully they're all getting services under those other programs, but it's hard when our staffing and our budgeting pulls those kids apart, right? That we all maybe can't wear multiple hats, but those kids don't have a choice there. So I love taking it back again to that level of a holistic approach to kids. And again, the approach that you all have to evaluation and adjusting and continuous improvement is so apparent as you talk through these pieces and talk through, again, like the fiscal conversations, but them referencing back, well, how have you evaluated the effectiveness of this plan, right? Are these activities actually making a difference for kids? So many great things you shared today. We are really grateful to have had you on the podcast and thank you and look forward to continuing these conversations, which are essential and a good thing we can talk about, watching that model at the Connecticut Department of Ed and how you're pushing that down to your districts and thinking about how we can help push that further up as well to think about how we approach things, even from our view as TA providers, right? How are we doing that in a joint way? So thank you so much. Any last words from Brian or Tom?
Sure, I said thank you very much for inviting us. And I do appreciate all the work and support that Cypher and NCSI and your agencies have supported us in Connecticut. So really appreciate your work too.
A ditto from me, and we're happy to have future conversations and looking forward to future conversations. I think one of the things that comes up that we didn't mention in all that much depth is just the capacity issues that are facing our state. And so Tom mentioned the resources, but if there aren't the individuals to be able to execute the supports, then we all have to think creatively about that. But I just really appreciate the opportunity to talk with you all and look forward to the ongoing collaboration.
Thanks, Tom and Brian. And just chiming in, thank you so much for letting us learn from you and with you. We look forward to continuing these conversations and these efforts collaboratively and just so appreciate your generosity and your willingness to share your experience with our listeners today.
Such a great conversation. With that, we'll move on to the dessert or cheese plate section of our General Soup podcast, where we share some of our resources. In the show notes from today's episode, you will find a link to a presentation from the state of Connecticut that provides some of the strategies and describes their summit in more detail. And in addition to that, we have provided links to a three-part NCSI webinar series that we presented in 2020, sharing best practices for state agencies to make the best use of available resources. It was geared toward COVID-19 resources, but the principles are still the same and apply to ongoing funds. It is a series of three webinars on managing resources effectively, balancing legal obligations and innovation, and blending and braiding funds. In addition, Cypher, the Center for IDEA Fiscal Reporting, has many resources available to help states better understand and communicate about IDEA fiscal requirements. You can find those resources and many others on Cypher's website, cypher.wested.org. And we'll include that in the show notes as well. So please visit the show notes for today's episode to grab the links to all of those resources.
And as you know, we always like to close our podcast with a joke. So for today, I'm going to ask Sarah what I think is a pretty humorous joke. Sarah, would you say that chicken soup is good for your health?
Yeah, it seems like it, right?
One would think, but not if you're the chicken. And as someone who owns chickens, I just find that, I think they would agree. I think they would agree with that. So we do always like to try to end on a light note. This, of course, is a very important and serious topic, but we're doing our best to also make fiscal funny. This production was brought to you by the National Center for Systemic Improvement and funded by the Office of Special Education Programs in the U.S. Department of Education.
Thank you to our producer and audio editor, Sanjay Pardanani. See you next time when we get together again to dish on General Soup.